Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report. Welcome to Hagman, where truth can't be silenced, a throwback radio-only, audio-only edition. Today, the day after Father's Day, 2020, it's June 22nd, 2020. I want to welcome you to the program. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in me, in Eric, this platform, the guests that we bring on. A couple of things that we're following. Millions of mail-in ballots will be printed by foreign countries. This tweeted earlier today by President Trump, as well as Antifa document reveals organized warfare tactics in the siege of the police department, you know, in Chaz. By the way, isn't that name Chaz, C-H-A-Z, isn't that rather interesting, okay? For many reasons, I'll just leave it there, all right? One more thing, and speaking of Chaz, this must be the summer of love. Remember that? Because the autonomous zone, second shooting in 48 hours in the autonomous zone. Can you feel the love? You feel the love? Oh, yeah. Do a background on the head of Chaz, Raz. That's right. It's Raz from Chaz. Do a background on that man. You'll see what he's all about. Maybe we can dig into that here later. One thing I want to alert everyone, and I don't see a lot of people talking about this. You see the statues coming down, right? You see the statues coming down all over the country. It's revisionist history. That's trying to erase our history. I'm going to tell you what's next to come down. You ready? Are you ready? Any from the vast studio audience that I'm overlooking right now, the biggest crowd ever since, you know, any takers? That's right. To the guy in the second row wearing the pink and green sweater, crosses, church artifacts, crucifixes, crosses, anything related to Christianity. That's the next on the chopping block. That's what's coming down next in this cancel culture iconoclasm with Black Lives Matter and Antifa activists toppling statues everywhere. Watch for them to go after those next. Statues of Jesus are next. Crosses next. I'm going to tell you right now, it's coming. It is coming if it's not already here. This is not going to end well. You know that. I know that. Let's not try to put lipstick on a pig. Speaking of pigs, I heard from a dolt. Thank you so much for your Father's Day wish. That moron from San Francisco. I've got some surprises for you. I'll just leave it right there. When you've got to make your miserable life, when you've got nothing to offer humanity, you know what? I'm going to stop there. I'm not going to go down that road. All right. Anyway, watch for this to happen. And are we going to allow this to happen? Are we going to allow the left to rip down statues of Jesus, statues of crosses? Is that what we're going to allow to happen? We going to let that happen? I'll tell you what, not in my backyard. And I hope not in yours as well. In my view, the time for any type of sensible negotiation, it's over. Try it here. And you know, I'll put a Trump sign in my yard. Go ahead. Try to rip it down. You will have a surprise. I was joking with my wife. She said, well, you know, kids want, what do you want for Father's Day? I said, remember those old lawn jockeys? I'm serious about this. This is part of American history. This is part of history. I never saw anything remotely racist about they were dressed in jockey uniforms, holding a lantern. People had them at the end of their driveways. Some were white, some were black, some were, in fact, the majority I saw were white. I don't know. Apparently that's racist now, or was. Look, I don't know. But I'll tell you something. I'm tired of these mamby-pamby, pansy-ass, say something, you hurt my feelings. Now, some things that you can say are just downright mean. And that those come from mean people. Obviously, but I'm talking about the very easily offended people out there. Are you serious? Yeah, I mean, are you that fragile in your own self that bothers you? We had a police officer in Erie, Pennsylvania, who sent an email from a government or from the police computer, responding. And it was, I don't know the entire story, except it was all lives matter is what this individual said. The bottom line was all lives matter. That was the response to a Black Lives Matter thing. And I'm not going to get into the case, but you can see where that's true. All lives matter. God made us all in his image, or at least, well, he did. And he was fired for that. 34 years on the department. He was fired for that. For saying all lives matter. Is this where we're at in the United States? I would say this. If this is where we're at, and yes, this is where we're at, the time for negotiation, the time for talking, the time for sitting down and attempting to iron out our differences is flipping over. It ain't happening. At some point, you reach a point where there's an impossibility for negotiations. Negotiations impossible. You want to know what's really behind what we're seeing today? Obviously. It's really simple. Conservative Treehouse did a great job. Published this morning by Sundance, the 2010 Arab Spring Common Connections to the 2020 Black Lives Matter movement. And this is Sundance era, Conservative Treehouse. Remember me telling you about how Arab Spring was not a spontaneous uprising. It was planned and it was about the balance of power. I talked extensively about this. The ideological interests behind the 2010 Arab Spring uprising are the exact same ideological interests behind the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests uprising. Not merely similar people, but the exact same people, the exact same group of U.S. people who were promoting the Mideast Arab Spring in 2010 are the very same people now promoting the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests. And I'm telling you right now, these people, the same politicians, the same media voices, the same newspapers, the same social media activists. This, written by Sundance, Conservative Treehouse, right on the money. Almost every participant and their support for the uprising back in 2010 to 2020. It's identical. Identical. What does that tell you? Obama's still in Washington. Jarrett's still there. dare I say, shining his shoes? Or wait a minute, it might be the other way around. If you don't see the communist thread, the Muslim thread, this is what John Moore talks about. This is what he's, look, John's been around. John Moore, thelibertyman.com, that's who's with me today. He knows. John, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing, sir?
Let me check. I guess I'm all right. How was your Father's Day, my friend?
Well, wonderful. I had two of my three grandchildren with me. They're here for 2 weeks. Twins, 13, they'll be 14 in August, a boy and girl. And let's see, tomorrow, a friend of mine, paramedic, is giving them first aid class. Then we'll walk across the street to the dollar store and buy all the apps for their personal first aid kits. The girl got a fiberglass recurve takedown bow and all the accessories, and we're going to be watching Hunger Games at movie night Friday night with our community because she likes Hunger Games. the boy got his first new rifle, a Ruger 10/22 takedown, and I'll be giving both of them lessons on the proper and safe use of firearms.
Good.
We're taking them both to a archery facility to get a professional archery class also. They both get their first flying lesson. Not many freshmen in high school have ever flown an airplane. And they'll be getting that if I can find a place that's not shut down from the Chinese flu, which has been a challenge. It's a good trip, and they'll be learning how to drive a Kubota tractor, farm tractor. They'll get some driving, an automobile driving lesson, and lots of swimming. I got a nice big huge swimming pool here, ATV rides, and watching movies when there's downtime.
I'm coming over. Maybe you can, you know, I need a refresher and turn down field stripping an AR and as well as an AK and a few MAC-10s and Tech-9s. And yeah, I'm coming over.
All right.
I'm bringing it. Plus, I'll bring my Speedos for the swim. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Eric the Tech just threw up a little bit in his mouth. No, I'll spare you the Speedos, but no, it sounds good.
Please.
Though. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're rainbow printed.
Rainbow.
Well, let's
go ahead. Sorry about that, John. Yeah, go on.
We can segue back and forth between fun stuff and serious stuff. The leadership of Antifa, Black Lives Matter, they're doing these things, they're tearing down statues and such as that. They're not doing that because of, they're upset with the fact that U.S. Grant owned a slave at one time, or Teddy Roosevelt, they mistakenly believe, was part of colonialism. No, what they're looking for, that's not their goal. Their goal is to trigger men, it could be black or white, who are alpha male warriors who live near these monuments, and are prepared to use deadly force to protect America's heritage. And there are men like that. I know men like that. You probably know men like that also.
Yep.
And they want the bloodshed. Once the blood starts flowing, and it hasn't yet in sincerity, there's been some fatalities to be sure. But once the blood starts flowing in sincerity, then it's off to the races nationwide. That's what they're looking for, and the pushback will come. They're going to blockade an alpha male warrior on a highway who will simply run them over. They're going to try to burn down a building that is owned by our friend, owned by the friend of an alpha male warrior who will use deadly force to protect himself, because if they're attacking the building and you're in it, you have every right to use deadly force to protect yourself. That's what's coming, and it's coming soon. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet, quite frankly.
Well, John, you know those people that lay down across the road and protest? You know what I call them? I call them speed bumps. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I ain't stopping. If I'm driving and there's a group of protesters that want to stop my vehicle, I'll tell you what, ain't stopping. Sorry.
Well, everybody's got their own decision. And I've thought about this a lot because I travel a lot. And my personal decision, which is subject to change, if they block the highway and there's nobody in front of me, as long as they're not attacking the vehicle or attacking any vehicle, mine or otherwise, I'll probably remain stationary for a period of time. Once deadly force is used, and a rock is deadly force, a clenched fist is deadly force, a stick used against a human being is deadly force. The first time that happens, then I will use them as speed bumps also. That's my decision. Of course, I'll have my 1911 in my hand at the same time.
You know, John, just to be clear, you know, I say that with bravado, you know, with keyboard muscles. Look, I agree with you. There's got to be a level of fear for your safety, fear for your life. And folks, that's
what it has to be. Legitimate. It has to be legitimate.
Legitimate. That's right.
And because we still have the rule of law.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and still,
there's going to be multiple in the modern age. There will be multiple cameras running when any incident of this nature takes place. And I don't want to be, prosecuted by some prosecuting attorney unless I have evidence on my side that I restrained myself. I did not use deadly force unless or until deadly force was being used against myself or somebody else present. Being an alpha male warrior as I am, if I see them trying to cause harm to another person, I will intervene. And I'll use deadly force to intervene. And that's just the nature of who I am. But I want the rule of law to be on my side. So I know when I may and when I may not use deadly force because I do. And, it's a tough place to be. I monitor the protests around Metro St. Louis. I intentionally avoid those protests. I've got a life that I want to live in my manner of choosing, and dealing with police officers and prosecuting attorneys and possibly a jury is not a goal of mine. I will avoid that if I can. If, however, there's some spontaneous event that I have not been aware of and I can't avoid it, I will deal with it appropriately and within the law as Missouri law exists. Missouri law and most of the 50 states allow you to use deadly force to protect innocent human life.
Right.
I believe that's the case in all 50 states. We also have Good Samaritan laws in Missouri. I don't know about the other 49 states. Good Samaritan laws allow you to protect innocent human life with deadly force also, if it becomes necessary. Here's advice for all our listeners. I would encourage all our listeners to take a real concealed carry class, not some watching a video for 2 hours where somebody hands out a certificate, but a real concealed carry class that takes at least a full day, where you learn the laws of your state when it comes to quote unquote proper use of deadly force. You don't want to have to be guessing. Well, what can I do? Do I have to retreat? Do I not? You know, the Castle Doctrine means you don't have to retreat from the use of deadly force. That's all Castle Doctrine means. Doesn't mean you got a free pass to shoot people whenever you feel like it. And it's been misapplied. The case of George Zimmerman is an outstanding example of the misapplication of Castle Doctrine. Zimmerman did not need Castle Doctrine. He couldn't retreat if he chose to. He was on a sidewalk, face up with a former football player using all his strength to beat Zimmerman's head against the concrete. Now that's clearly and obviously deadly force. When a former football player is beating your head against the concrete, of course he's trying to kill you. And Zimmerman responded appropriately using deadly force to defend his life. Why the prosecutor chose to even mention Castle Doctrine, I don't know. It wasn't necessary. It put Castle Doctrine in a bad light. And most people don't understand what Castle Doctrine is, do they?
That's true. And if you want to take a moment to explain it, because I think to re-explain it and explain it at the depth that it needs to be, because,
Once again, I'm, I'm very familiar with Missouri law because that's my.
Well, let's
my
use that point. as a template.
We'll use it.
Okay.
We'll use what was like before Castle Doctrine and after. Now, I helped defend a gentleman who shot his son-in-law to death in an incident at the gentleman's home. The son-in-law was visiting, and this would have been before Castle Doctrine. Would have been in the mid to late 1980s, and. The gentleman was an older gentleman, older. He was older than his son-in-law, obviously. And the son-in-law was threatening him with great bodily harm because he was a big, tough young man. And so our client was armed, and he was in his home. When the attack began from the son-in-law, our client retreated from one room to the house to the kitchen, and then from the kitchen to the back porch. Once he got to the back porch, he was up against the railing of the porch and could no longer retreat. At that point, he used deadly force to defend his life. We had a successful self-defense for this gentleman, and it worked out really good for us. Now, at the time, Missouri law required him to retreat as long as he could retreat. The law made an allowance that once you got to the point where retreat was no longer possible, then you could use deadly force. Now, under Castle Doctrine, there's no longer a requirement to retreat.
What you referenced was the furthest, I believe it's called the furthest wall doctrine, which you were talking about earlier.
Right.
At least here in PA, used to be called that, where you've got a good.
Well, we didn't have a specific legal term for it that I'm aware of.
Okay.
If there was, I'm not aware of it. But now Castle Doctrine, and I don't know how many of the 50 states have it. If deadly force is being used against you, there's no requirement to retreat. You can use deadly force immediately to defend your life with no requirement to even make an effort to retreat. That's Castle Doctrine, pure and simple. It doesn't give you a free pass to hurt anybody without cause. That's far from it. And the media attempts to portray it that way. Oh, you can use deadly force whenever you feel like it. That's not Castle Doctrine at all. That's a mischaracterization by the mass media to attempt to make Castle Doctrine go away, which would be a huge mistake. So I believe that's sufficient, and it varies. We have 50 states. People need to know what the law is in their state, don't they, Doug?
Yeah, they do. And if you just do a search, folks, on Castle Law or Castle Doctrine, you'll find it comes up. There's a map. There's a lot of information to choose from, yes. But you need to know how this law protects you in your state, because there's different different laws, different states, and stand your ground laws.
There is. And, well, since we're on this topic, let's explore this a little bit more. Let's say, for example, there is a violent encounter, and you either shoot the criminal and he dies, or you shoot the criminal and he's seriously wounded. And the police respond. Now, I'll tell you what, if a police officer finds himself in the same situation where his home's being broken into at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll tell you what the police officer would do, and you should do the same thing. So the police officer shoots the criminal, breaking into his home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the officers respond. The police officer will not give a statement to the responding officers other than give his name, his date of birth, maybe a couple other biographical things. And then the officer will say, gentlemen, we will have a more detailed conversation once my attorney is in the interview room with me. That's the proper response. It doesn't matter if you're on the right side of the law. It doesn't matter if the criminal was a criminal and you acted in self-defense. None of that matters. The proper way to respond, if you find yourself in that situation where you had to use deadly force, whether or not somebody died or not, is to tell the responding officer the following. Gentlemen, my lawyer says I can't talk to you unless he's in the room with me, physically in the room, not on telephone, physically in the interview room with me. I would like to talk to you. I will talk to you. And once my attorney is in the interview room with me, then we can talk. And the officers may say, well, we can clear this up right now. If you talk to us immediately, you won't spend the night overnight in jail. That might be the best investment you've ever made in your life, is to spend a night in jail.
Absolutely. And I've seen this go sideways, as you have, you know, working in the profession you've done. I've seen this go sideways many times. Please.
I'll give an example of a case I worked on.
Go ahead.
A woman, widow, she was, I believe, early 80s, was found in a small town in Missouri, was found beaten to death with her kitchen stool. The police responded, and they started interviewing everybody that knew her, including an 18-year-old boy who lived across the alley from her, who cut her grass, maybe got the groceries for her. Not a terribly bright kid. He managed to graduate from high school because he didn't make any trouble. The kind of young man who, on an 80-degree day would wear a stocking cap outside, stocking cap on his head. Not terribly bright. So he'd never been arrested, never been in any trouble for anything whatsoever. These officers take him to the police station. The big tough cops, slightly built teenage boy who'd never been in trouble, scared to death, not terribly bright, probably zipping along with maybe a 75 or 80 IQ. And the young man gave them a statement that he was in the woman's home earlier that day to help her, whatever it was, get groceries or cut the grass. That was enough. The police charged this young man with first degree murder. That's all it took. I was, his family hired an attorney. The attorney brought me in to investigate. This young man spent a year of his life in jail, waiting to go to trial for first degree murder. In the meantime, it took me nearly a year, but I finally found the witness who led me to the two perpetrators who actually murdered this woman. I got the tape recorded statement of the witness, got that to the prosecuting attorney. Within hours, all charges were dropped against our young man, and first-degree murder charges filed against the perpetrators. Now, if justice had been swift and sure, this man, young man, easily could have been tried, convicted, and executed, because I didn't have the time to find the man who did the murder.
Scary.
But once again, this young man, naive, not terribly bright, I thought, well, of course I'm innocent. I can tell the police what happened. You know, I was in her house helping her. He was in her house 2 to 3 times a week, every week, getting groceries, doing odd jobs, cutting the grass. Oh, I'll be okay. I'll just tell the cops I was there, and it won't be a big deal. Frequently, and you've seen this also, Doug, I'm sure, police officers want to solve the case and move on to something else. And once they're convinced that they have their suspect, it's over as far as they're concerned. They write up the report. They submit it to the prosecuting attorney. The prosecuting attorney looks it over and says, okay, we'll go ahead and file charges.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes. That's all it takes. I was assigned to the case in 1976, and I found the murderer, and charges were dropped the summer of 77. And I went back to that police department on another assignment not too long ago. It's been about seven or eight or ten years ago. There was one or two officers still there who had not yet retired or died, and they remembered the case. They remembered it crystal clear. It was a small town. It was really big news at the time, of course. And we talked about it a little bit and how fortunate they were that they didn't end up trying and sentencing a young man who was completely innocent. This happens all the time, and Doug, as you and I know also, most criminal defendants do not get a defense investigator, at least one that knows what he's doing and can actually help, do they?
No, not at all. No, the majority end up with a public defender just out of law school. You know, you couldn't defend themselves.
And that's how I started my career. Yeah. I started my career like that in 1973. But we had a small office. We had a small former prosecutor was assistant public defender, a young man who was very bright and dedicated as the public defender. And I was assigned my first murder case in the fall of 73. I was 25 years old. And they told me the following. They said, John, we're going to give this young man a solid gold defense. That's what he's going to get. It will be solid gold. We will not leave a stone unturned to defend this young man. And basically the next year of my, well, not quite a year, but most of a year, the next year, I spent investigating this crime and this defendant in a proper manner. And we did that multiple times. I was there 5 years, and we did this multiple times with every homicide we had. Whenever we got a homicide, everything stopped. Everything else was put on hold. And we had a sizable caseload, as you might imagine. But everything else became secondary to the homicide. And that was my training back beginning in 73. And every homicide since then basically has cost me a year of my life. Without exception, about a year of my life.
That's about right. Yep. You know, John, I think people look at TV 48 minutes or 42 minutes, however long an hour long murder mystery might be, drama, and they think, oh, 42 minutes, and it's over, it's said and done, it's all tidy, you know. No, it's not. That's so far from real life. And it's, I mean, you're chasing witnesses, you're attempting to authenticate, information. It's just, it's a labor intensive. And when I say labor intensive, I don't know how else to describe it. Man, you are really in the field, in, they call them gumshoes, you know, detectives, wearing down your shoe leather, chasing after witnesses, getting people to.
Well, some things have changed and some haven't. Yeah, the way we find witnesses has changed dramatically, to say the least, in some ways and some not so good ways. There was a time back in 73, my office had an account with TransUnion, the people who take care of your credit reports.
Right.
Back in 73, Doug, I could walk into TransUnion and request the full credit report of any citizen of the United States.
Sure, you get the credit header and yep. Yep.
No.
The full credit report?
The complete credit report.
Okay. All right.
Oh, you know, that's changed. Now you can get the credit header.
Right.
But, and let's explain the difference. A credit header gives a name, address, and, you know, basic biographical stuff and a few cursory things. No, that's the way it is now. Back then, it was the complete credit report.
That's a difference, by the way. And you're right. Just real quick, I know you're going somewhere with this, but
it's just a quick example. And computers were brand new back then, and we were just getting used to using them. So the way we locate people has changed dramatically. But what we do after once they're located hasn't changed at all. We still need to be in the same room during an interview with this individual, face to face, eyeball to eyeball, and that hasn't changed and never will change, will it, Doug?
Not at all. And to what I was going to say about locating people, back in 80, this was 86, computers were just kind of gaining in vogue, I should say. And I was working with an agency, I'll just say that. And they pulled up all sorts of information, including, what you're talking about, the credit report, except I think back then it was a header. I don't remember, but nonetheless.
By 86, it would have been the header.
Okay.
Only.
Yeah. And it's from, but you know how this person was found? And I swear this is the honest God's truth. You might have heard this as an anecdote somewhere, but this in my case is the truth. Secretary, was at the desk and she opened up a phone book. Remember those folks, phone books? Anyway, she opened up a phone book, looked at the last name, found the name, found the phone number, called the phone number, asked for the person and handed the phone to the agent, standing next to me saying, here, you want to talk to this person? Here he is. Here he is. So,
in the meantime, the agent's going through all these high tech.
Exactly.
Ways it weren't even necessary.
And I, the only reason I say that is because sometimes, you know, it's just, I don't know. Sometimes you just have to do the most obvious, but sometimes you forget about doing the most obvious in exchange for, hey, we got to go for the high tech stuff. But go ahead, continue with this because fascinating stuff. By the way, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. Go there for all the news information that you need. Front page, the web presence of John Moore, as well as the link to his radio broadcast, which he's calls him a professional.
At first homicide was a real education for me. We had a 18-year-old young man. He might have been 19. Not terribly bright. He may have had about a 75 IQ. And he had three, he told me, you know, in the privacy of our, my relationship as his defense investigator, men and women will tell things that they would never tell anybody else because they know their life's on the line. And he told me what his three goals in life were. One was to, make love to a woman. The second one was to jump out of an airplane. And the third one was to murder somebody. Well, he joined the U.S. Army. He was in the U.S. Army, I think about 10 to 14 days. So jumping out of a plane never happened. He never convinced a young woman to spend any time with him alone, so that didn't happen. And last but not least, he borrowed a pistol from a coworker. He equipped himself with the pistol, a knife, some wire, and duct tape. And he went to a public park at night where young people were known to park their vehicles and talk and kiss and whatever, specifically looking for a couple to murder. And he did. He found the couple. He murdered them in cold blood. And I knew all this. I knew he was a cold-blooded killer. And I told my boss, I said, man, I don't even want to work in this case. No, I want nothing to do with it. He says, John, here's the deal. Unless this young man gets a complete solid gold defense, there will be, his conviction will be overturned at a higher court. Now, we knew that, and everybody in the community, at least in the courthouse, that this guy had severe emotional problems. Going back to being 3 years old, where he was walking through his family home with a knife saying, kill Mikey, who was one of his brothers. So he had severe mental disorder. And our goal was to make sure that the defense he got was complete, solid gold, and it would never be overturned because we knew that we did not have the death penalty at the time in Missouri, by the way, that he would spend the rest of his natural life in what we call Missouri the Biggs Building, which is part of the Missouri mental health system, where they incarcerate the criminally insane. Yep. So our goal was to make sure that once he got there, he would never leave, ever.
Right, right.
Because his defense was a $20,000 criminal defense in 1973 dollars, by the way. And that we'd met our goal. Every appeal of that conviction has been defeated for 47 years and will continue to until the man dies. And that's the way it should be because this man's mental disorder is just simply who he is. It's not something that can be fixed. It can't be. Huh. And it was a good outcome for everybody. So yeah. I was convinced. I was convinced of, you know, this is how our system works.
Or should work. Anyway.
Should work.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it should work. There's always exceptions. And I'll go into another homicide here in a moment, but that's how it should work. Now, the next example is a blatant example of how it doesn't work. The most recent homicide that I worked on, I began, was a cold case murder going back to 1982. An attractive young woman was found shot to death. And I'll try to skip some of the details to so we can make this, you know, go a little bit quicker. The police interviewed about a dozen people, suspects, and they decided that the boyfriend, there was no suspect, excuse me. There was no suspect. So the murder went unsolved until, I'll see, 11 years ago would have been what, 2009, I guess.
Yeah, that's about right. My math.
And skipping some of the details, there were two new investigations, one in Missouri Highway Patrol, the other the Dent County Sheriff's Department. Both investigations were coming to a conclusion. Both investigations were preparing warrants for arrest, probable cause, and the Highway Patrol got done first, a few hours, maybe a day before the Sheriff's Department. So the prosecutor took the one from the Highway Patrol and did not receive the one from the Sheriff's investigators. In fact, the Sheriff told his own men, gentlemen, if you'd got done a day sooner, we would have filed your charges first. So the new charges on this cold case came up with the boyfriend being the perpetrator. The Sheriff's Department found the correct perpetrator. Now, in the course of this new investigation of this 30-year-old cold case, both men the perpetrator that the sheriff's deputies came up and the highway patrol both gave up DNA voluntarily. Shortly after the sheriff's suspect gave up DNA, he committed suicide. And of course, our client, who was the highway patrol's suspect, did not commit suicide. The man that the sheriff's had came up with was later found to be an admitted convicted rapist. And there was the prosecuting attorney who came from the U.S., the state attorney general's office, did something very unethical. In fact, if he didn't file a motion before the judge and have the judge granted it, he would have been found guilty later of unethical, improper conduct for withholding exculpatory evidence. Exculpatory evidence being evidence that shows that the guy charged with the crime did not do the crime. Very serious, convincing exculpatory evidence in the following manner. Now, imagine a fingerprint is on automobile glass, on the outside windshield of an automobile, Doug.
Yep.
We all know, at least we should know, and you're about to find out, any rain at all will dissolve and make that fingerprint go away in about 2 seconds once it hits that fingerprint. It's just gone. The fingerprint
would be because of the purity of some people listening under normal conditions. So,
correct.
Well, all right. Yeah.
The dead girl's car was found 10 miles from where she was found and across the street from some homeowners. The rain that night was so hard that the homeowners had just planted a tree the day before. They thought the tree was going to be washed away. The highway patrol recovered the admitted convicted rapist's fingerprint from the windshield of this girl's car on the outside windshield, which meant it was there after the rain. It could mean nothing else. That's the evidence that the prosecuting attorney filed a motion before the judge to keep the jury from hearing about it. At the end of the trial, which we lost, by the way, the attorney, a very good friend of mine, he used a mechanism to make permanent record of the fact of the evidence the jury was not allowed to hear after the conviction. We had two newspapers and a TV station in the courtroom. The jaws of these reporters were just dropped to the floor when they heard this unheard evidence. Supreme Court hearing, Missouri Supreme Court, the same prosecuting attorney, was literally, and I was there in the room, literally waving his arms, flapping his arms, saying he did not want to confuse the jury with this exculpatory evidence.
Jeez.
Oh, it's only been two weeks ago that the conviction was overturned. I believe it's this week the convicted man is being released from jail, having lost 10 years of his life for something he had no involvement with whatsoever. And he was lucky to be alive. He has multiple health issues, and I intend to visit with him and his wife sometime soon once he catches his breath and gets used to not having bars between him and freedom. But what a travesty, a miscarriage of justice that this man had to endure. So it happens. The system sometimes is completely broken, and it was a cooperative effort between what I regard as a very unethical prosecuting attorney and a very unethical judge to withhold exculpatory evidence from the jury.
Yeah. Yes. But under what?
I regard it as careerism.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was my question.
This prosecutor put his career, advancement of his career, concern for the win column, just like a baseball player or a professional bowler, ahead of what's right and what's ethical and what's proper.
Look, I'm facing the same thing here on a very, very personal level. There's a big difference too between what you know as an investigator or as the investigator working a murder case or a case versus what you can prove. In presenting it to a district attorney or the prosecuting agency or agent, they're going to look at well, what's my reasonably, you know, is it reasonable that I'm going to prevail in the courtroom? Based on what we have, and there's two separate subjects here, but they're looking at their scorecard, aren't they? As prosecutors.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in Missouri, prosecuting attorneys are elected officials. They have political considerations along with legal considerations. They have budget considerations. They have manpower considerations. I know the prosecutor, not the current one, but the one before, I knew him. No, I actually know all these guys because I'm a Republican committeeman, and there's no elected Democrats in my entire county. There's not going to be. But the prosecutor before this one, I was at a dinner meeting, and I asked him, he was running for prosecutor. I asked him, do you really want to do this?
Meaning the job?
The job itself.
Yeah.
I mean, the workload, the lack of resources, financial resources, manpower resources, it's not easy.
Right.
And the jurisdiction I'm in anyway, because of lack of resources, money, and manpower. Yeah, but he did one term. He had his own considerations that he wanted to do it, and he did not want to run or need to run for a second term. This current prosecutor seems to be doing okay with, you know, what he has to deal with. But my heart goes out to those people and what they have, you know, what they have to deal with all the pressures they have to perform within, you know, the ethics and guidelines of the legal profession, the politics of it, and money and budget restraints and so forth. It's not easy.
No, it's not. Now, let me ask you a question. And I don't know what you plan on talking about. And you know what? I'm not making any apologies. I'm just going to ask you these questions because I find this even germane to what we're dealing with today in a lot of different levels. But what's your experience with police agencies, responding police officers, contaminating a crime scene?
It's not as bad now as it was 45, 47 years ago.
Okay.
When I first got in this business, I worked with police officers who were literally, I'm not being flippant, they were illiterate. They could not read a paragraph in a newspaper. I'm being quite serious when I say that. There was no police academy training requirements whatsoever.
That's scary.
I mean, that's the way it was. That's the way it was. That's changed. Obviously, you know, all 50 states, I'm pretty sure, have police academy requirements for anybody carrying a badge and a gun these days. They get training in the academy to how to properly work a crime scene so they don't contaminate the scene. And so, yes, it still happens, and I still run across it. But it's not nearly as bad as it was before the police academies came into being and these men and women received proper training. It's unfortunate, but it does happen.
Well, and here I'm going to get very, very personal. I'm going to share something with the audience and share this with you, John. You and I have not spoken about this, and I have not uttered this to the audience at all, but I'll get very personal. And here's the personal part of this. When my son was found dead, it's going to be a year ago next week. And the reference I made, by the way, to the moron out there in San Francisco, you know who you are. But that aside, when the police responded to the scene, my son had been dead for almost 5 hours. And there was somebody there the entire time. Now, during that five-hour period, what happened during that 5 hours was absolutely critical. When the responding officers came in, they came into a scene that looked like, made it appear, and even convinced me with the notification that he died from a heroin overdose. Oh, but he didn't. But he didn't. Without revealing any more, I'm not going to reveal any more than that, except to say the responding officers came in. They saw what it looked like. They took the report as if it was, And then, because of my insistence, and I did not see, I you don't investigate something that personal to you. So you,
no, bring, you can't.
So you can't. You, no, no. So, no. So I brought in people who had experience and I said, please, I called in every favor I could call in. And they looked at it and they said, look, here's the deal. We know what we know. We know exactly what happened. And I, look, I saw all the evidence. I saw every single text message, every computer message before, during, and after. I know what happened. But here's the problem. We can't prove it. The reason we can't prove it is because not only was the scene tampered with, but because the responding officers treated this as a drug overdose. Right. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, just another stat. No worries. It wasn't. It wasn't. And the individual that was there, well, I'm not going to get too personal beyond that.
No, you don't need to preserve.
But you know what, John? That's the problem, I think, with police. A lot of times they get a little bit, what would you call it? Just, you know, okay, we've seen so many of these. If it looks like it, we'll just say that's what it is. And you know what? No one's going to question. There's really no one that's going to have the presence of mind to question the facts. And I feel bad for people out there who don't have the resources like you and I do, or this, I don't want to say intelligence,
experience.
Right. That's it. Experience, right. To say, wait, stop. Hold on a second. This doesn't make any sense. And then, oh, well, it's too late.
Well, men and women who are suicidal have a profile, which is well known to anybody that's in the business and has been so for, you know, any period of time. And, that's a beginning point, is the person suicidal or are they not? And do they fit that profile? Now, accidental overdose is, more difficult to say the least. A
right.
lot more difficult.
Of course.
In fact, the U.S., there's a, I don't have it in front of me, it's been big news the last 4 or 5 days. One of the pharmaceutical companies has come up with a painkiller that's 1,000 times more powerful than opium, if you can believe that. I can see a lot of fatalities coming out of that inadvertently. It's a tough place to be. And once the scene's been contaminated and, you know, that water's under the bridge, you can't go back and fix it.
No, you can't. And, you know, it's, I even, I'll just share one more thing. I even went to the coroner. I said, I handed the coroner his own report. I said, here's what I'd like you to do. I want you to read that first paragraph out loud to me. He said, okay. You know, he's humoring me. Okay. I'll read it. He read it. I said, does that make sense to you? And he said, no, it doesn't. And okay. So, but yet, I guess, again, you've got, a number of things, overworked police departments, overworked prosecutors, overworked defense attorneys, overworked private investigators, overworked DA investigators. You got everybody, and it's chaos. It's just chaos. And again, I feel bad for the people out there who don't have the experience or wherewithal to say, wait a second, please take a look at this. Stop. Before the scene gets contaminated, that is, I'm sorry. But anyway, yeah, I kind of went off on a tangent there. But I you know, it just, again, people are suffering today. And John, I'm another thing, another left-hand turn here. I'm looking at a case file right now from December 13th, 1979, still on my desk. A woman, young woman, beautiful, beautiful girl, 22 years old. She was murdered. She was found buried in the basement of an apartment building. She had been murdered or went missing the previous July. So I know who did it. The police know who did it. The district attorney at the time, now a retired judge, knows who did it. I talked to the person who did it. In fact, I talked to the person who did it two weeks ago now, for the purpose of saying, you ready yet? I mean, you want to clear your conscience, but you know what? Even though you know, you can't. There's a huge difference between what you know and what you can prove. So
absolutely.
Anyway, sorry for taking those digressions, but hey, what the hell?
Well, there's another cold case. It's really not officially in my inventory, but a similar situation. A woman was found shot to death in the the boyfriend claimed that she committed suicide, but the evidence that I've been able to determine is it was a murder, and the coroner at the time was convinced it was murder, and several other people in law enforcement, but there was no desire to pursue it, I guess, and really get some charges filed against this individual. So it remains an open file, not in my inventory officially, but I would jump back on it in a heartbeat if somebody wanted to bring me back in on it and get going on it again.
And you'd be the guy. And I'm not just saying this, folks. John Moore has got a tremendous amount of experience, and you'd be the guy just to do that, to do just that, I should say, to look at these cold cases. And thank you for what you do. And thank you for what you've done. And I think a lot of times your resume and your experience has been underplayed. You've understated your experience. So for the folks listening out there, again, thelibertyman.com, John Moore taking on the world, and I think doing very well at it. Immensely popular show every day of the week. Tune into RBN. It's right there on the on his website there. You can listen to current program and archives as well. John, again, I didn't mean to dominate the conversation or the direction of the conversation. So wherever you want to go, take it. But I know people love to hear about this.
We need to be we got a break coming up here in about 4 minutes. But
we
need to be advising people on the State of the Union, quite frankly, and the insurrection. People want to keep one hand. I've done the same thing. Want to call this civil war. It's insurrection is what it is. It's insurrection. It's a communist insurrection. And people need to understand the nuances of it, what it means, what it doesn't mean, how to protect themselves, how to protect their families. This thing's about to go hot. I don't want to be in the business of making predictions, but once we get to the point that we're at, the leaders of Antifa and Black Lives Matter have a goal. The goal is massive civil disorder, and the way to get that going is to have alpha male warriors respond with deadly force to the deadly forces being used against them or their homes and businesses. And that's inevitable.
Is that a bad thing? I mean, seriously.
Well, it's a tragic thing, but it's going to be men and women have a right to defend life. And if they're in a business that's being attacked, they're not defending the business, they're defending themselves. So innocent life deserves to be protected, and it should be protected. And it's going to mean using deadly force to stop the criminals. These are not peaceful protesters. These are violent criminals committing violent crimes. And if you're trying to burn down a building, you're obviously trying to kill people because they haven't done a search of the building to see if anybody's in there. Not at all. So it's arson is attempted murder, whether somebody's in the building or not, because they don't know who's in that building.
And the fire.
So that's what's coming. And I don't want to see my country go into civil disorder and suffer from communist insurrection. I see no alternative. And these, the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, have had demonstrations in relatively small towns. For example, the county seat where I live, Crawford County, Missouri, the county seat, Steelville, population 1,600. There was a couple of dozen people that had a peaceful march, and they were watched over by the local police and the sheriff's department, and nothing happened. But small towns and away from cities like Steelville, Missouri, are not used to having any kind of demonstration of any kind of any sort whatsoever. It simply doesn't happen out here. So what they're attempting to do, the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, they're attempting to make the rest of America uncomfortable and insecure and wondering, when's it going to be my community? When will I be driving down the highway to be stopped by people who want to hurt me? When will my community be attacked by communists with incendiary devices that want to burn down my home, burn down my business, and kill me? And that's what people are wondering, rightfully so. Nationwide, rightfully so. And it's inevitable that the leadership of Black Lives Matter, Antifa, will get a violent response from men and women defending their own lives, defending the lives of their friends and family. That's inevitable. That's what they're looking for, and that's what they will get. They will achieve their goal. And it's not too far from happening. Matt Bracken, who you and I have talked about before, he granted an interview in the last 24 to 48 hours, basically saying exactly the same thing. I was listening to some of it this morning. And I have a lot of respect for Matt Bracken and his work. And I agree with Matt Bracken 100%. It's coming, and it's coming soon. It's coming like a freight train out of control downhill. And people need to be aware of that and prepare to deal with it.
And on the other, exactly. Yeah. And on the other side of the break, we're going to tell you folks, well, John's going to give his expertise and I'll chime in too, how to deal with this. You're going to need to know this. I believe be prepared, both spiritually and physically prepared. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's his website, thelibertyman.com. John Moore. As always, just right on the money. Stay right where you're at. Remember, right back. Network break. Give us 2 minutes.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
This is Hagmann. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Hagmann Report for today. It's the day after Father's Day. You know, I hope every father out there had a great Father's Day. I really do. And you know, to the moms out there, I think, in addition to fathers, I think mothers, same day. I mean, I think we should have two Mother's Days. I really do. And to my good friend Ricky out there, Ricky, I'm talking to you. I just want to read this real quick here. On a lighter note, I watch and listen every weeknight while I cook dinner. This has become a kind of a giggle because my husband will say, "What are you and Doug cooking tonight?" Well, Ricky, if you move a little bit to your right, let me see what's on the stove. Does that smell good? Oh, yeah. I want to thank you very much, Ricky. God bless you. Thank you so very much. This from our Bag O' Mail. Bag O' Mail. That's right. I couldn't do this if it wasn't real. Thank you, Ricky. And save me a piece. All right. Appreciate that. All right, folks, my guest, John Moore. Eric the Tech, by the way, happy Father's Day.
Thank you, you too.
And you said something off air, and I couldn't hear because I have both things in my ears. So did you want to say something to me?
No, just only thing I said was your rainbow Speedo. That's it.
Rainbow Speedo. That was like two conversations ago, wasn't it?
That's all I said.
Oh, all right. John Moore is my guest, thelibertyman.com. The first hour, we had a great talk the first hour. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, John has a wealth of experience. He's done more than most people have read about and certainly done more than, he's done a lot. His experience is vast. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's where you can, of course, read about, you can find out who he is. Plus, listen to him every day on the John Moore Show on RBN. That's required listening, in my view. John, thanks for waiting over the break, and welcome back.
Good to be back, sir. Absolutely.
All right. It was a fun first hour, by the way. So you take it this hour and tell people what they need to know.
All right. Well, first of all, there's two parts. One is understanding the threat, the real threat, not what's being hyped up by the media. And then once you understand the threat, how to have countermeasures. The threat at the moment appears to be densely populated urban areas, attempts by Black Lives Matter to go to outlying areas. It is largely a matter of trying to get publicity, and I don't believe much else. That could change, but for the time being, that's the way it is. Densely populated urban areas is where they've been able to have some success with their riots. They're destroying our heritage in the form of tearing down statues and so forth. If you live in or near a densely populated urban area, you're certainly at risk when you're traveling. If you live nearby an area that's been targeted, you're obviously at risk. And first of all, lives come first. And with that in mind, you need to also understand the following. Almost no property insurance will pay a claim that's due to a consequence of civil disorder. If you find one, good luck, and God bless you for doing so. But most insurance companies, most of the time, will not pay a claim for the loss of a business, automobile, truck, home as a consequence of civil disorder. It's just gone. While in the meantime, the mortgage payment and the car payment doesn't go away. So that's something that a number of friends of mine in Ferguson had to deal with during the Ferguson riots. And both cases, my friends, the men stayed to guard the largest investment of the family home, while they evacuated the women and children. And that was their decision, and I respect that, because that would affect people adversely for decades in the future to lose their biggest investment of the home and have no insurance to cover it and still have the mortgage obligation. Point being, if you live in or near an area where civil disorder may take place, you really need to think long and hard about that situation. What will you do? You need to have a plan in place before the civil disorder takes place, not when you see smoke at the end of the street. That's no time to make a plan. The time to make the plan is on Monday, the 22nd day of June. That's the time to make the plan. Are you going to evacuate the women and children and defend the home or defend the business? Are you going to let it go and hope for the best? Will you call in friends of yours to help defend the home or the business? How are you going to defend it? Good question. And have all those plans in place before the event takes place. I'm sure that in the 6-block area of downtown Seattle, there's a combination of residences and businesses both, that the majority of residents there who live there were probably caught with their pants down did not know that they would be in an occupied area, occupied by violent communists who are enforcing their own version of rule of law. They probably had no idea that their lives and the risk to their property would be so upended as they have been now for how long has Chaz been in effect there? About 7 days, 10 days? I've lost track.
I don't know, but long, too damn long is my answer. Yeah.
Obviously. The plan has to be realistic. It has to be, one that is with hopefully within the rule of law and one that, you're comfortable with. So, and it's going to vary from person to person. It really will. If you're an apartment dweller, it makes your choices a lot easier because you don't have an investment other than maybe some furniture and artwork, some things like that. That can certainly be evacuated relatively quickly. Three or four friends, a U-Haul truck, get that stuff out of there. If you own a home or own a business in an area that could be impacted, it's a whole different picture. Most business owners have a debt obligation, a mortgage on the real estate, financing for equipment and supplies and so forth. And, knowing that, that debt obligation does not go away, if it's all damaged or destroyed is a very serious matter to say the least, very serious. And thinking about that and praying about that needs to take place in order to put a plan that's viable within the rule of law and has some chance of success, hopefully some chance of success.
You say within the rule of law, John. I know what you mean. I just don't know if it exists at this point as we know it. Because if we had a rule of law, Chaz would not exist, right?
Precisely. And the success the communist insurgency has had has been in Democrat/communist-controlled cities. That's not by mistake. You know, that's not happenstance. That's by design that the Antifa, Black Lives Matter have chosen places that are communist friendly. The mayors of these jurisdictions, the governors of these states, they may not be outright communists, but they're certainly, helping the communists achieve their goals and not interfering with the communists achieving their goals. I've had these conversations with my daughter, who lives in a far suburb of Seattle, about an hour drive, maybe hour and a half from downtown Seattle. And that's her home. Her and her husband have employment there. Well, actually, my daughter's employment is not working at the moment because of COVID-19. But they have a home. They have children in school. They have mortgage obligations. And pulling up and leaving is not easy to do. Their community, I regard as being safe for the time being. And that's in quotes for the time being. The goal of the communist insurgency is to destroy our economy, collapse our civilization, and for the time being, make sure that Donald Trump is not reelected. They really, really need to do that because Donald Trump having 4.5 more years will mean the end of what they're doing for probably two generations. Because of Supreme Court and federal court appointments, if nothing else, besides reversing things done by two Bushes, one Clinton, and one Obama. It's not just Obama's things that were done, but two Bushes, one Clinton, and one Obama did very harmful things to our society, to our economy, to our military. When Donald Trump raised his right hand to become president, our military was the same size or slightly smaller than it was on December 7th, 1941. A very small military. Sure, they have great gee whiz Star Wars technology, but still a very small military. And there hasn't been time to rebuild it. He's doing the best he can, given the constraints he has to deal with. But these conversations, if it's a husband and wife, they need to be, very detailed, very lengthy, and have detailed planning as to deciding what will they do now and what will they do once the civil disorder comes to their neighborhood. and have all those plans in writing, preferably. And if they need help from somebody, make sure they got a firm commitment from that somebody, preferably somebody related to by blood or marriage, so they're more likely to show up. But it has to be a trusted, very trusted individuals that are going to help them evacuate if that's the plan they've got. And evacuation needs to take place before the smoke is at the end of the street. You need to be aware of what's going on in your neighborhood 24/7. And these protests can pop up relatively quickly with very little notice. And people need to be quick on their feet to recognize what's taking place, what's likely to happen. By now, you should know whether your mayor is a communist sympathizing Democrat or your governor is a communist sympathizing Democrat. And if you live in one of those jurisdictions, you need to be taking this very seriously right now. This whole thing, as I said earlier, I need to keep making this point because it's so very important. It needs to be burned into people's brains. Once this thing goes south nationwide and the bloodletting starts, it will become a nationwide bloodbath, literally nationwide bloodbath, bringing these densely populated urban suburban areas into raging infernos, making the summer of 1968, I was in Vietnam, and I was watching this from half a world away, our cities burn. And many dozens of books were written about 1968. Dozens, if not hundreds of books, will be written about 2020. We are living in historical times here, Doug. We truly are.
Yeah, we are.
And
not necessarily favorable. And let me add one thing to what you said in terms of making plans. Take a moment, folks, right now to just make a note to make sure that you have, for example, your birth certificate, your passport, all your important papers gathered together. And if you have a fireproof box or some kind in your home, make sure you've got them together. And those of your children, or whoever else is part of your family. In addition to everything else that John was talking about, I just happen to think of that because,
it's an important list, as you mentioned, birth certificates, marriage license, health records, insurance papers, mortgage papers, car titles. All those things would fit in a relatively compact area. We're not talking a lot of, and that needs to happen because, and family photographs. Most public records can be replaced with a little bit of time and money, but family photographs frequently can't be replaced. Once they're gone forever. And so that needs to be done. It needs to be done in advance. You don't want to be searching through different boxes and parts of the home when you see smoke at the end of the street. That would not be wise.
Do you have I'm just curious. Do you have and do you recommend people have like a turnout bag or a go bag, at the ready?
Of course I do.
All right.
Of course I do. And most of the Vietnam vets my friends have kept a bag ready for combat all these decades. It just became who they were and became part of their persona. And I do the same thing. And I encourage people. A bug-out bag is typically what it's called. It can also be called a get-out-of-dodge bag or maybe a get-home bag as far as that goes. The components are going to vary from person to person, region to region, season to season. But basically, food, water, shelter, ammunition for whatever firearm you've got, map, compass, medical supplies if they're needed. And the common mistake civilians make when they're putting these bags together is they put too much and they get too heavy and they can't possibly carry them. And it's as predictable, and that's what happens.
And folks, don't forget about the don't rely necessarily on GPS. Make sure you have a hard copy of a map with you of your town or wherever you're in, your county, your state, your town, and even the United States, a paper map.
Well, I've been teaching map reading courses and using the use of a compass for decades, and most Americans, they can somewhat get by with a highway map, but a topographical map is something they've never seen, never used, don't know what to do with. And my first question is, how many North Poles are there? I did this with my 13-year-old grandchildren last night. And they look at me with this blank stare, as most adults would. Well, there's only one North Pole. No, there's two North Poles. What are the two North Poles, Doug?
Oh, can I answer this? Let's see. There would be the actual North Pole and the magnetic North Pole.
Well, true north is, true is north, the actual north.
Right, right.
The Earth rotates around true north. And magnetic north is a different place.
It actually is moving, yes. It's moving,
and,
I think, 13
and
miles
the difference
a year.
Yeah. The difference between the two on a topographical map, and there's a, at the bottom of all these topographical, topographical maps are what's called the legend. That's where you get your education, what all these little squiggles and symbols mean. The difference is called declination. The difference between true north and magnetic north is declination in degrees. The area I live in is very blessed. We have about a five degree declination. At a certain point, it's zero. And other points, it's a very big, degree difference. But for navigation, you need to know what the declination is so you can, end up where you want to be instead of someplace else. We're not going to have a map reading course today, but there are excellent books written on use of a topographical map and a compass. My grandchildren just got themselves their first compasses last night, gifted to them, and we'll be going over some topographical maps and the use of a map and compass here while they're here visiting with me. I can't be with these children to protect them. What I can do is give them skills that they'll have the rest of their life to help protect themselves.
Wow. Well said, and amen. And amen to that. And that's what I think that's what our jobs are as grandparents, as parents, as friends, whatever. We need to assist others as opposed to having them rely upon us because we're not going to be around, you know, forever. So, yes, you're right.
That's right. So you don't necessarily have to have these skills yourself to make sure the youngsters, you know, children, grandchildren get these skills. There's places you can get the training. For example, Red Cross offers first aid and CPR training. There's places where they can, I know the Nationwide Sporting Goods Company, REI, they have all kinds of training that they offer there, including the use of a map and compass and other useful skills for the outdoors. Obviously, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, something called the Royal Rangers, which is a group that does not allow homosexuals to be in charge of taking boys into the woods. Lots of places get this training. The topic of firearms comes up a lot. Most public, private shooting ranges and shooting clubs will have certified, NRA certified instructors that can teach you how to properly and safely use a rifle, shotgun, pistol. Tactical training courses are available also in certain areas. We don't know how much time we've got, Doug. I still look at the first Tuesday of November as a date that's critical. A lot can happen between now and the first Tuesday of November, a lot. And the way things are going, I believe a lot will happen between now and the first Tuesday in November. What do you think, Doug?
You know, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. The first Tuesday in November, you know, look, I suspect that's at the outside. And I'm not saying that the world's going to end on that day or, you know, whatever, but I mean, just go back to 2016. You had these, I don't know what you call them, screaming at the sky and all that. Imagine what that would look like in 2020. All right. So, plus the violence that we've seen ramp up. So what I'm looking at here is while the weather is still good all across the majority of the country, I see it as a danger point. I mean, right through the election. And I think the election is just going to be a bookmark in history, perhaps. But I'm telling you, John, I just have a bad feeling about the rest of this summer. I really do. I think the flashpoints can be anywhere, could be anything. I mean, I'll tell you what.
Well, Atlanta is a good example.
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
What happened there, if it wasn't for the crisis we have going on right now with George Floyd and what the media hype, it would have been local news only, end of story. it's kind of ironic. The same prosecutor in Atlanta who filed first-degree murder against this police officer only a week before had referred to a taser as a dangerous and deadly weapon. And of course it is. It's not some toy. A taser is something that can kill you. And if you point out a police officer, the right thing to do, the proper thing to do, and what he should do is put you down with his firearm. And that's what he did. And second-guessing this man's actions is not good. We've had, last I heard, it's been 3 or 4 days ago, 70 Atlanta police officers have turned into resignation, and dozens more, maybe hundreds more, have called in sick as a
the blue flu.
less severe protest of their own.
I saw that whole the entire video. I don't know if you watched it.
I have.
You know, my biggest complaint is they took too long. I mean, if I was to blame the police officers for anything, I would have wrapped that up the first 5 minutes. Okay, look, call your girlfriend, get her butt over here, have her take you home, leave the car here, go away. You know, I mean, at that point. But here's why I say that. I say that because I think the police officers have been they're so afraid now that they're trying to cover all of their bases in the field. And we can thank the leftist people in charge for that. And even some of the police chiefs who are just bootlicking the left. So, I mean, if I had to complain about that whole thing, that would be get him on his way somewhere, either to jail or, you know, to his hotel room or wherever he was staying. But my goodness, you know, enough. That's my only complaint about that. But go ahead.
Well, second guessing what those men did on the street is not productive.
No, I know, But you know what? But look, it's not productive, but to me, it's indicative of, I wouldn't want to be a cop today. I mean, I remember.
Oh, no, I don't advise young people, but, you know, I tell them the following. I said, well, first of all, you can't get a C- in high school chemistry and not know that mercury doesn't belong in your bloodstream, and you will be required to get vaccinations if you become a police officer.
Yeah.
Second of all, any body fluid, and I repeat, any body fluid can kill you. And that's just the world we live in. And if you're a police officer, you're going to be dealing with injured people and drunk people and hurt people, and you're going to get other people's body fluid on you. That's just the nature of that employment. So I don't recommend, and there's lots of other reasons, but I don't recommend anybody become a police officer anymore.
And you know, that's sad. You know how sad that is, saying that? Because it was, at one time, I thought it was an honorable profession. And, you know, all right.
Well, I still regard it as honorable, and out here where I live, you know, the officers know the people know the officers, and life is good. And they deal with the criminals, they deal with the drug addicts, and they deal with them very effectively. And on one hand, on the other, in these major cities, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, they're basically war zones. As of yesterday afternoon, 60 people have been shot in Chicago. I don't know how many died. Of course, sometimes it takes a while for people to linger before they die. But that was about 8 hours before the weekend ended at midnight last night. I don't know what the total count was for people being shot in Chicago over the weekend in that 48-hour period. And I'm sure there's parts of Chicago where the police simply don't go unless they got two patrol cars and four officers on routine patrol.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous. There's parts of St. Louis like that. And I've talked to these officers where they won't go unless there's two squad cars and four officers for routine patrol, not even responding to an incident. That's just routine patrol. One car following 10 feet behind the other.
I'm telling you, the big cities, Democratic controlled cities. Yeah, I was in Washington, D.C. It was in the back of a Uber or one of the taxi, whatever. And he almost turned off on a street. And he said, oh, man, it's a good thing I didn't do that because, in fact, it was an English-speaking. The reason I remember, he spoke English. He said, oh, my gosh, we may not have come out of there. I'm thinking, wow, you know, okay, nice. Yeah, there are places you don't go. Cops don't go, and people don't go. And that's, to me, nowhere in America
should be. It's been that way for decades.
Right.
It's nothing new.
Right. Right.
It's been that way for decades. I had a surveillance. Yeah. This would have been, mid to late 1980s, probably 87 or 88 along there in St. Louis, Missouri. And it was two-man surveillance, with two vehicles. And we're both Vietnam vets. We meet on the parking lot of the community center, and we're doing a communications check, weapons check, getting our body armor ready for an all-night surveillance. So he was sitting half a block east of the subject's home. I was a half a block west. And the police were patrolling in that area, and they came by with two patrol cars, four officers. And I would casually wave at them, and it was a black female sergeant in charge of the patrol. So finally, after about the third or fourth drive-by, she stopped to say, to visit with me. And she's, when she was leaving, she said to me, I just had to find out why this white boy's in my neighborhood. So, we explained the whole thing to her. But when the sun went down, the gunfire started.
Uh-huh.
And it was random shots, a pistol shot here, a rifle shot there. And a couple hours later, around 10 or 11 o'clock at night, the automatic weapons fire began,
uh-huh.
machine guns.
Uh-huh.
And it went on all night long in this neighborhood in St. Louis, a residential area in St. Louis, Missouri, in the late 1980s. We're talking 30 years ago.
Yep.
30 plus years ago. And so when they do respond, three officers go into the incident, and one officer protects two patrol cars. That's the way it was 30 years ago, Doug. This is nothing new.
Right.
Now, that's how violent these cities have been this way for decades.
Of course they have. But now... Would you say it's a different kind of violence, though, now? I mean, than it was maybe.
Well, the violence that I was describing then was random and unorganized. Well, the violence taking place in these cities is not random, and it is organized.
Okay, yeah.
The men and women trained by George Soros, they are trained, they're equipped, and they're paid for by George Soros and his associates. That's what's different. The organization, the training, and the equipment. They're trained to fabricate incendiary devices. And
thanks for bringing I'm sorry to interrupt. Thanks for bringing that up, because if I don't say this, I'm going to forget. Every video I've seen, John, and then, again, you can go back on track, but every video I've seen lately of these protests, Black Lives Matter, think about this, Black Lives Matter, every single one of these videos, I'm not seeing too many black people in these videos. I'm seeing all whites and all young people on, with it.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Go ahead.
Black men and women typically don't get involved in political matters. There's an inherent distrust of anything political for any reason. They've been sold out so many times that they have an inherent distrust of anything political for any reason. They simply don't get involved. I've known, and I have dear friends who are black, and worked with them for years on different topics. They just stay away from it. They don't want anything to do with it. They don't trust leadership. They don't trust what's going on, and they don't get involved. And quite frankly, if I was a black man, I probably wouldn't either, to be quite frank.
I don't care what color.
They don't.
Yeah, I don't care what color you are.
So they don't.
Yeah.
Yep. Being a black man or being a black woman in this country is not easy. Most of these men and women are going to be preoccupied with making sure their family is well taken care of, that they have a good career and a good life. And getting involved in white man's politics, which is how they regard it, is simply they don't want, they don't need, and they don't do it. Now, there's exceptions, of course. Of course there's exceptions. But the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa people, these are communists. And their goal is the communist goal, the destruction of our economy, destruction of our civilization, making sure that President Trump is not reelected. And by any means necessary, if it means killing people and destroying millions, if not billions of dollars worth of property, they'll do that. Whatever it takes, they will do it. And they're prepared to sacrifice their own people. It's inevitable that there be violent, deadly pushback against men and women attempting to destroy our businesses and hurt people. That's inevitable. They're gonna stop a vehicle where a man or woman is well trained and well armed, and it hasn't happened yet, but it will happen.
It's gonna happen.
Of course it will. the men I know involved in the gun industry, the gun culture, they say that the sales of firearms are unprecedented right now. There's never been sales of firearms like there are right now. Men and women walking into gun stores and buying almost anything because it's pretty slim pickings.
Yeah.
They just want to be armed.
Yeah. I two family members I know in, May purchased, two firearms, you know, two female family members who never before owned a firearm. And some of my wife's side of the family. So yeah, look, I see this coming. And I think any normal, sensible human being that watches the news or has, they see this coming. I mean, it's coming. And when it does, man, it's going to hit with a vengeance. And I agree with you. There will be blood on the streets and it's not going to be fun. No one should want this, but I'll tell you something. John, I'm not going to run from it, but I can't, I don't want it.
Well, for most Americans, war is 90 minutes in a dark air conditioned room with popcorn. That's what war is to most Americans. I assure you, that's not what war is.
No.
Saving Private Ryan came as close as any film I've ever seen to duplicating watching a war, but that's just still, you know, the men dying are not your very close friends. It's entirely different when you're talking to your best buddy and then his brains are all over the front of your shirt a moment later. It changes people.
I was going to say, how many people like yourself have experienced just that? All right.
Well, it changes. Everybody in combat is changed.
Yep.
There's no sense in going into the details.
No, but
Colonel,
you're right.
I believe it's Colonel Hackworth that said every man and woman has a capacity for being in combat, a psychological capacity. And once that capacity is reached and passed, they're no good to anybody for anything when it comes to combat anymore. They simply can't do it anymore. And there's no formula as to how long a person can survive psychologically in combat before they can't tolerate it or be part of it anymore before they fall apart. Point being, combat is brutal. It's just as brutal and barbaric now as it was when Genghis Khan was running across Asia. The brutality and the violence is no different now than it was 2,000, 3,000 years ago. It simply isn't. There's, you know, thoughtful prayer will help you deal with this to do what you need to do to protect innocent life. That's the best advice I can give you. Getting good training, getting properly equipped will all help. Removing yourself physically from possibility of it is probably the best thing you could do. What do you think, Doug?
As you pointed out earlier, a lot of people don't have that luxury or that ability to move themselves from where they are. And to those people, the only thing I can say is, you know, you've got to be as spiritually prepared as possible, as physically prepared as possible. But I agree, if you can extricate yourself and your family from that situation, you know, from that possibility, please do. And you know, John, the numbers coming out of people trying to buy homes in areas outside of the cities, driving home prices up in many of the suburbs and rural areas.
That's right.
It's amazing.
I've seen it in my neighborhood. I've had more inquiries in the last 3 to 4 months about property in my neighborhood than I have the previous 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Dramatic increase. People saying, I've had enough. I want my family to be safe. I'm getting out of here. Now, there's a caveat. Now, when you say people can't move, well, I would add one word at the end of it, easily.
That's true. Yeah.
Painlessly. No, right. It won't be easy. It will be painful. It'll be painful economically. It'll be painful physically. It'll be painful emotionally to leave everything you know and everything you love.
Yes.
You only get one life, unless you believe in reincarnation. You only get one life. And that can, you know, so despite the pain, I would encourage people to maybe make that decision anyway. To go ahead and leave these targeted areas. All urban suburban areas I regard as being targeted areas. Obviously the Democratic controlled ones more so than others, but eventually all of them will be. And that's my reality.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah. You know, I was joking around with Eric today. I was going to take a gigantic Donald Trump for president sign and put it in his front yard. And I think here's what I think people should know right now. And I don't, look, personally, I don't back down from this. I will fly an American flag in my yard if I so choose. I will have a Donald Trump for president sign if I so choose, or whatever sign I want to put out there politically or patriotic, in a patriotic sense. Those people who, however, understand this. There are people out there that they see an American flag. They're going to try to take it down. They're going to try to burn it. It's happened, and you can see the news. Lord forbid you have a Donald Trump sign out there. Oh, my goodness. Your house will get torched, you know. But now we're seeing – multiply 2016 by 10 or easily 10 – as we're going into this election year, as you brought out, as you mentioned. So, yeah.
As president, in the minds of the communists, socialist, communist, Democrats, Muslims, our opposition, in their minds, this president cannot be reelected. They're done. They're done for two generations.
Yeah.
If Donald Trump wins this election and raises his right hand in January 2021.
Let's assume for a moment, and I believe this to be the case, I believe that Donald Trump will win re-election. That's what I believe. Only because of the, who's he running against, Joe Biden? Or somebody we don't know yet. Okay, but regardless. So barring any irregularities, and even with those factored in, if he wins or the irregularities are so evident that, you know, it's a question mark.
They can only do vote fraud to a certain point, then it becomes obvious.
Right. So I see this as a defining moment in our history where, yeah, it's going to happen. And when it happens, the people who have fought for the last 4 years to take him out of office now have nothing left to lose. So they're going to go full bore against you, me, and anyone innocent out there. I that's what I see happening. So we need to prepare, and that's kind of what we're talking about this hour with John Moore. The Liberty Man is his website, thelibertyman.com. A good friend of the show, good friend of mine, and folks, so listen to his show every day. It's right there on thelibertyman.com. All right, so yeah, it's coming.
You may not be aware of it, but you just inadvertently quoted Janis Joplin. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Oh yeah, that's true. I was trying to think, what was that song about buying me a Mercedes?
Lord, let's right. Buy me a Mercedes Benz.
Yeah.
My friends all have Porsches. I must make amends.
It shows our age, doesn't it?
I guess.
Okay.
Well, she was a sweetheart and she died too young, drug overdose.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, the spear carriers, the men and women who are working on behalf of the communists, many of them don't even know that they're working on behalf of the communists, they will be the ones that will be outraged, and they will feel like they have nothing left to lose. I was watching a video of the Seattle police responding to the man shot who later died in Seattle. And the protesters there in Chad, Chaz, whatever they call it, some of them looked like they were having mental breakdowns, just seeing the police in what they regard as their territory. I don't know if they had psychological problems, if they were high on drugs or both, but the emotional turmoil, just observing police officers, was pretty extreme, to say the least, quite extreme. Wailing and holding their head and shaking their head and screaming. And, they weren't pretending. They were genuinely very emotionally distraught at just the sight of police officers walking down the street to respond to the shooting injury of the man who later died.
Well, they should be put in those, like you mentioned earlier about those, criminally insane. I mean, if that's the trigger point where you've got a police officer helping someone who's been shot, wounded, and you're triggered, you got some issues, you know.
Right.
But see, here's why. I mean, my goodness. These places should, that place should not exist. That place, how are they getting their water? What about the electricity? It's all from the city, right? It's all, they're not autonomous. They're dependent. And it's,
of course they are.
It's baloney.
Well, within 24 hours, they were asking for food donations.
Yeah.
Only certain kind of food, no meat.
Of course not.
But they could be shut down pretty quick, shut down the power. Shut down the cell phones, and they're toast. You know, they're finished.
Yeah, but why not? I mean, so you got a mayor that's just,
placating.
Yeah.
Mayor is placating. She's obviously complicit in the takeover.
Absolutely.
I'm sure the majority of the Seattle police have had it up to their eyeballs with her cooperating and placating the communists. It's a shame. I read a article written by a National Guardsman who was activated up there in Metro Seattle, and he was, the emotion in his writing was very clear and very evident of what he saw and what he observed and how it was so wrong. But it's coming to a city near you.
Yes, it is.
Success in one Democrat-controlled city means they'll be looking for success in other Democratic-controlled cities.
Yes.
And that's coming. That's inevitable. And there's a lot of Democratic-controlled cities in this country, aren't there?
I think most of the big cities, well, yeah, they are. I mean, look at one of those red-blue maps, and there you have it. So, yes. And the COVID thing, too, that's factoring in here. And I see another bad thing. I mean, I see them rolling this back out again for this.
Well, they had success the first time, fooling most of the people. They're going for it again.
Yeah.
The first time was a complete fraud and fabrication. There is a virus, but the fatality rate is 0.1 overall. If you're under 70, it's 0.04.
Was it you that said, and pardon me if it's not, if I didn't tell you, if you didn't know that this was COVID-19 or there was COVID-19, would any of you realize that? Would you even know about it? If no one said anything about it, would you even know the difference between the flu and this? I mean,
No, not at all.
I didn't think so. But media
hype.
No, you're right.
Took this and blew it up.
Yeah. Now, I do believe that there's some strange things going on with this virus. I don't know what they are. I don't know if this is just but I don't trust, you know what? I don't trust anything. I don't know. My BS meter is going off on all of it, on everything I see. Even that George Floyd shooting, just to kind of change momentarily the subject, you know, looking at that video, I got some questions. I'm not trying to be a nut job, you know, but I got some questions. I just do.
I do too. We talked about these last week.
I know. I just question everything at this point. Anyway, go ahead, man.
Well, along the same lines as COVID-19, we're now, because moms are not taking their children to get vaccinated, we're now seeing 200 fewer children per week dying from SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. 200 a week are not dying because they're not getting vaccinations.
Wait a second. And folks, that's why you need to listen to John Moore.
We've had these weekly and yearly averages of children dying from SIDS for more than 10 years.
Right.
Probably closer to 20, maybe more than that. So that's well known and well documented how many children die per week, per month, per year from SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. We're now seeing 200 a week less dying from SIDS. Hmm. Obviously, the only difference is they're not getting vaccinated.
Interesting. I did not know that. All right. Wow, I didn't know.
Professor McCanny just sent me the link for that just a few minutes ago. The vaccination is coming. And I'm not going to sign up. I'm not going to get their vaccination. They can keep it as far as I'm concerned. You know, if I have to make some adjustments to my lifestyle, I'll make those adjustments. If I can't fly commercial, I don't fly commercial anyway. So
I'll pick you up on my private jet. No, that's all right. We have a private jet. I'll pick you up.
Yeah. Okay. If I can't go in a federal courthouse, well, I won't be called. I'll never sit on a federal jury anyway. So I'll have to meet them someplace offsite. If some federal agent or official wants to talk to me, I won't be able to go into the courthouse.
There you go. And if you're a defendant,
I don't have no reason to go into a military base. No. So I won't be going to a military base. President's already said he won't make it mandatory. I think the man is actually anti-vaccine himself in his heart. And I hope that he will go public with, he's already at the edge of doing it, saying that this whole thing has been a hoax and that he was led astray also by people like, Fauci and Birx, scarf lady.
Man, the garden gnome and the woman of many scarves. Yes.
Yes. Scarf lady. Okay. So the vaccine's coming. I was telling people in March that, the vaccine's been in refrigerator for 6 months. You can't make a vaccine as quickly as they claim to have made it. It simply can't be done. It's not physically possible. Vaccines, as I've learned from some slight research, is the only medication that doesn't go through a double-blind testing. It's exempt from that to determine if it's safe. That's so wrong. It's not funny.
Plus, you've got that immunity for the vaccine makers. And, yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, but what about the people? John, what about the people who are, you know, half our age, who are gainfully employed, who need to work to make to support a family, that are going to be required, in air quotes, to take this vaccine, and there's no exemptions. See, to me, I want to know what to tell them. I want to know what to tell the mom. What do they do? I mean, I'm serious.
It's obviously a personal choice. It's obviously a serious decision. As the old saying goes, you can always get another job, but you only get one life.
Yeah.
Nobody said it would be easy. It would be a tough decision. And, you know, you and I are sitting here, comfortable with our situation, but, it's easy for me to say, don't do it, because my employment's not at risk.
Right.
I would encourage people to think very long and very hard before they do it, and consider alternatives.
I agree.
If you have a skill set that's portable, such as being a heating and air conditioning person or a truck mechanic, many skills are very portable that you can take any place and start over with a minimal amount of hardship. If you're a factory worker, that's different because you don't have skill sets that are portable as a general rule. There could be exceptions. If you're in a situation where you're not quite vested in a retirement program, that's a serious consideration to walk away from 8 or 10 or plus years working towards a retirement program. That's not easy. And I wouldn't begin to say it's easy. On one hand. On the other, I have no emotional interest in what people do or don't do. I respect their choices, and I respect their hardship they may be subject to. And that's their choice, whether they stick with the employment with mandatory vaccines. Now, one lady I know, she's a registered nurse, and she works at a place that does dialysis, and she refused the vaccines. They need her so bad, they allowed her to work there, but she has to wear a mask because she would not accept the flu vaccine. And so she's okay with it, and the employer is okay with it. So there may be ways to get around it, such as this registered nurse. She wears a mask when she's on the job, on the payroll, and otherwise she never wears a mask. So people need to look at their own situation, see if there is some kind of exemption where maybe you'd be allowed to wear a mask while you're on the premises at your place of employment. I was at a car wash Saturday, Doug, and it was in the mid-80s, and all the employees working outside and inside both were required to wear a mask. I said to one of the attendants before I was leaving, I said, you know, it gets to be about 95 degrees instead of 85. You better know how to do treatment for heat prostration. You're going to have people you work with dropping over.
Yeah,
wearing a mask when it's 95 and high humidity, That's a prescription for a medical emergency, isn't it?
Yeah, but you won't hear that coming from the morons, you know, on the news, of course. Yeah, it is. Come on. But common sense, people. Common sense. But, yeah.
Well, many people are already pretty fragile medically to begin with, even young people.
Sadly.
And you put somebody who's medically fragile wearing a mask, doing manual labor, you know, it's not that hard, man, but still, you know, cleaning a car is manual labor and wearing a mask when it's 95 degrees and high humidity. You're putting these at-risk people, whether they may have high blood pressure, maybe something else, maybe obese. They're certainly at risk from passing out because of wearing a mask when it's 95 degrees and high humidity. That doesn't need to happen.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, John. It's unbelievable how we've come to this point and how, I look at the mask as a sign of submission.
Well, you know, it is. And a friend of mine runs a business in a local community. He says, John, I was in there last week. He says, John, I can tell who the liberals are when they walk in the door. They're wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And that was a very astute observation, I believe. He has regular customers for years and years and years, and he made that observation. Out in my community, almost nobody is wearing a mask. Of course, there's very few liberals, but the ones that are liberal apparently do wear masks. How about that?
I think we're seeing a pattern develop here. And that does concern me when I look at the numbers. When I look at the videos and see the people, the amount of people wearing masks and following the little guidelines on the aisle floors and, you know, keeping 6 feet apart and doing this and doing that, I'm thinking, you know, if they tell you to jump off that cliff, I'm sure they would. You know, it's...
Well, if they tell you men this direction, ladies that direction, get on the buses.
Yeah. Okay.
They'll do it.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, John, you've done it. It's the end of the show already. I want to thank you. It was a great
time.
Thank
you, sir. I got new pictures of my Triumph on my website.
You do? Okay.
I do.
I didn't see them. All right. So I'm going to have to take a look at that. That's thelibertyman.com.
Now I'm going to get a custom bumper sticker that says the following. Windshields are for sissies. My Triumph automobile does not have a windshield.
You're a man because, frankly,
you know. Airborne all the way.
the bugs in my teeth get a little bit of a problem. All right, brother. Hey, God bless you. I had a great time today. It was a great show.
It was fun, Doug.
All right. Until next week.
See you
God
next
bless.
Monday.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Folks, that'll do it, man. I'll tell you what. That was a great show. What'd you think? Hey, put in your comments and on YouTube. And do me a favor. Really mess up the algorithms. Subscribe to the Hagman Report on YouTube. Just hit the subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up button. That really messes with all those mathematical factors. And also one more thing. Do me a favor. Cause me some grief. Make me run out of more coffee bags. Go to HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com. For our coffee, you've got Patriot's Blend, Revolution Blend, as well as the Detective's Choice Hypercaffeinated. Great stuff. I'm drinking one right now. And Eric the Tech doesn't drink coffee. We're talking about tea, maybe. What do you think? Let us know. Let us know. All right, folks. Again, L.A. Marzulli, tomorrow. First hour, L.A. Marzulli, tomorrow night, followed by Stan Deo. And I got a special treat for you on Thursday. Tyler. Who? Tyler Quayle. That's right. Steve Quayle's son. He's going to be joining me Thursday night with a lot of information. I've got to tell you, I enjoy speaking with him. I enjoy, just buckle up. That's all I've got to say. Buckle up. And when I started off with this hour, I just want to remember, or want to remind people, you know, first go the statues and the books and such, right? In the wake of this new cancel culture iconoclasm. In fact, PJ Media wrote up, there's an article there. CPAC leader warned statues of Jesus are next. Well, the left immediately confirm his concerns. That's right. Watch, it's going to happen. Where's your line? Where's your line in the sand? I ask that of you. Statues of Jesus are next. It won't end. Think about that. Thank you so much for joining me. Ricky, great dinner tonight. Thank you so very much. Your husband's a lucky guy. Good food. All right, folks. Until tomorrow, may God bless each and every one of you. Thanks so much for your support. Good night.